Now, we've certainly hit the refresh button, and most of us would like to live our lives differently, have a healthier, more functional, you know, life. Take control of your health, for example. You know, and we've been having chats around this, and a lot of those chats have centered around eating healthy foods that taste great, because at the end of the day, it's sustainability that you want, and also to exercise regularly. And the point was made, you know, instead of going to a gym, why not just walk on the beach or walk up your flight of stairs every day and start layering those? But the next guest, your next guest, is Dr. Tamara Pfeiffer. She's the leader in Africa when it comes to medical biohacking and pioneers the fields of life extension, youth enhancement, and also mental and physical optimization. And I think the big question is, what does having a long life actually mean? So, Dr. Tamara Pfeiffer, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Hi, Kino. Thank you for having me.
So, it's a pleasure, by the way. So, a lot of the conversations we have about healthier and longer life centers around, you know, keeping physically active and eating the right stuff. But it's more than that.
Absolutely. Where it's really exciting is we're moving to an area of precision medicine now. So the one size fits all is old medicine. And the more we can individualize what sort of exercises you should do, how many minutes a day, how many rest days you should have, what sort of nutrients your body's really good at breaking down and what you're not so good at breaking down, what we need to supplement with and what we need to have in an activated form, when we can start to individualize lifestyles and exercise and diet to that extent, that's when we're moving forward.
That's fascinating. You know, it's, and I'm going to stop saying, you know, it's one of those things I'm trying to get out of in 2020. But if one looks at the human body, unless you have your finger on the pulse, you end up being like a GP. A GP looks at you, checks your heartbeat, checks one or two things, but you go to five different GPs and you'll probably get two or three different diagnoses. And a doctor I spoke to once involved in artificial intelligence and all of that said that medicine is a guessing game sometimes. But if we could have our finger on the pulse of what exactly is happening at a micro level in the human body, there's so much more that we can do. Our diagnoses would be much more accurate. And is this the space you're playing in? And if so, how does one go about doing that?
Yeah, we're hoping to be playing in that space very soon in South Africa. We're already able to do much more advanced biochemistry than we were a little while ago, where we are testing beyond just a normal cholesterol test. We're looking at things that go along with the cholesterol, whether the arteries are sticky, whether there's oxidative cholesterol, whether it's going to be inflamed or not, because those are much better predictors of heart disease than just cholesterol. So that, we've got really advanced genetic testing in South Africa. So that's the kind of space we're currently playing in, trying to get more precise, trying to understand that it's not just a disease, but it's that person who is suffering from these ailments. But the AI is incredibly interesting. I mean, we've seen AI diagnosing diagnosticians by up to 25%, because the algorithms are able to take a lot more into account than what we can as human beings. So it's not a replacement, it's just an addition to a really good offering that medicine can give.
And that's, a lot of people in the medical fraternity go, oh, you're going to replace jobs. It's not about that. The doctor who has access to the AI is able to make better decisions. A radiologist with access to the AI that can, for example, diagnose tuberculosis, one of the biggest killers in the country, will have a much better strategic advantage than a radiologist that uses conventional ways to try and establish whether or not someone's got TB. And people don't understand it's – yeah, sorry, you were saying, doctor.
No, you hit the nail on the head, and that's what they're saying. Is they're not saying that these artificial intelligence and the robotics, it's not going to replace doctors. But the doctors that use it are going to replace the doctors that don't.
What about nanobots? I've been looking, and there's the Xenobot that they've just spoken about yesterday. Is it possible to, you know, take a tablet, and in that tablet you've got all these nanobots that then float around the body and can pick up your vital statistics and communicate back to you or even your health practitioner when something might potentially go wrong.
That's an incredible, incredible thing that we're bringing in now. And where it's amazing is that now we're able to tailor the treatment on a day-to-day basis, almost an hour-to-hour basis. So there may be days where you'd need more blood pressure medicine, less sugar metabolism medicine, more cholesterol medicine, and your 3D printed tablet will be printed every single day according to your daily needs.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Exciting, right?
It is very exciting. I'd like a watch that says to me, hey, you're going to have a heart attack at 1:45 unless you go and see the doctor. Shall I make an appointment? Because the watch is attached to whatever I have that's monitoring me and tells me what's going to happen, helps me save my life.
Absolutely. We've even got bio tattoos that they're now testing for babies. So we can pick up the baby's breathing rhythm, the heart rate, if they're having nightmares, what's going on during the night, and alert the parents or alert the doctor.
Now, when it comes to a longer, healthier life, moving beyond, as I said, the exercise, moving beyond, and maybe not beyond, it obviously would include eating healthier. It includes staying active. We talk about biohacking. Can you explain biohacking within that particular context?
So for me, I look at medical biohacking, and where it becomes incredibly important for a longer life is to know yourself as intimately as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So not to wait until we're sick, but to go and get a comprehensive biochemistry, comprehensive blood test done, get your genetics done, understanding what our low penetrance genetic mutations are. So there's two kinds of genetics. The high penetrance is a high risk of a disease happening, and low penetrance means that we have 75% chance of not getting the predisposed diseases if we make the changes. So the more intimately we know ourselves as an individual, and the more we watch ourselves and monitor ourselves, we're able to prevent a lot of these things and individualize, as we said earlier, exactly what these plans need to be. So we can work smarter instead of harder.
So what does it mean to become limitless?
Oh, so loaded question, but to me it's about being as optimal as possible using science and technology. So if I can enhance my performance in all aspects, if I can adapt my diet, my lifestyle, my habits, and my genetics to make sure that I am focusing better, my memory is better, I'm more agile, my joints are staying flexible, I'm not getting hardening of my arteries, I think that's really becoming limitless to the extent that we can at the moment, and reducing our long-term risk by understanding what we want as our future destination in regards to our health and taking steps towards getting there.
Sometimes it's really boring eating healthy food. Will we ever find a way of dealing with the negative effects of, let's say, really fatty burgers? So if I, as Kino, would like to go and have a double burger with bacon, egg, and cheese on it, because that's what I feel like, I go and have it before my walk, I take a tablet, and all the negative effects of that particular burger is just obliterated. Would we ever find ourselves in that type of situation, do you think?
Yes, we're already almost there, actually.
Oh.
So there's a very exciting little thing called an AGE, which is very aptly named, but it's AGE, which is Advanced Glycation End Product. And what that is over years and years of eating certain foods, so things like brine meat, things that have been char-grilled, that nice, delicious, crunchy crust on the bread, excess sugars, what that does is it sticks two collagen or elastin fibers together, making them hard. So for the skin, it's not nice because it's wrinkled, but really for your health, if your arteries are getting harder, we're more prone to heart disease, atherosclerosis, blood pressure. If our lungs are not expanding the way they are, if our knees and our joints are no longer as flexible, we are generally getting older. And that accumulative damage over time up until now has been irreversible. They are now in third stage clinical trials to find a molecule that can actually break those bonds apart and get us back to the elasticity that we were in our 20s and 30s. So, yes, these things are on their way.
I think one has to be very careful what you ask for.
Yes.
Then you're going to have, yeah, you know, so if you're growing to 120, I don't see myself going further than that. Anyway, 120, where does the state's obligation to look after you end? And
so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No. Go for it. Go for it.
A lot of things are changing with regards to that. The World Health Organization has already recognized aging as a disease. So age-related blood pressure problems, age-related diseases were never categorized that way, and now they are. Things are changing with regard to retirement ages now because the health span is increasing. So I think that's even more important to look at than lifespan, is if we are healthier for longer, if we have the brains and the bodies and the biochemistry and the biology of a 30-year-old when we're 60 and 70, then we can compete with people who are 30 and 40. We're no longer not as creative or not as competitive. So if we have an aging population that is so vital to the economy, I read an incredible article the other day about the economy of longevity and how much it's going to put into society with regard to travel, because we're able to do things that we weren't able to do in our 60s now. Yeah. So the health span, I think, is where we need to focus. And governments are going that way. I think, especially in the Nordic regions, it's moving that way. And the Asian populations, absolutely.
But there are also economic implications to all of this. One, then, if I live a longer, healthier life, I'd have to then look at population control. We all feed off finite resources. And if I'm living to 120 and I'm living a healthy life and I'm able to compete with a 30-year-old, we can't keep having people, because if we keep having people, this limited resource that we call Earth will get drained.
So that's really interesting. Because Africa is the only continent with a positive population growth curve.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else has a negative population growth curve. So already the population is reducing generally. But resource-wise, I love this topic, because a lot more information and a lot more funding is going into sustainable resources than is going into longevity medicine or biogerontology. We're already having lab-based meats. They've already produced the first fully functional amino acid correct egg in a laboratory. So we're able to do these things now more and more and more. We're getting a lot less impact on the environment with sustainable energy sources. And that technology and that research is growing much, much faster than our ability to extend lifespan. So I think we're going to be able to. And also an amazing thing I learned the other day was that every time the population doubles, we have 24 times the amount of innovative solutions being created. So the more people we have, the more solutions we'll have.
So you almost have a regenerated Earth. So when you're no longer killing cows who damage our ozone, etc., through farting and all the rest of it. So you don't need all those cars. We don't have to farm them. We can literally grow these things in laboratories, as you say. We can replenish the earth. We can replenish crops. We can replenish everything that has been generated for our own subsistence. Is that what we're moving towards?
Absolutely. And also with the advancement of these other technologies that you were speaking about earlier, the robotics, the AI, it's freeing up humanity to live the life that we've always dreamed of. It's freeing us up from the labor of checking out parcels and cleaning houses and cooking food to being creative. And when we've got that time and that space to be creative because robots are doing the manual labor, we can solve more problems.
Interesting indeed. I can certainly take calls on this. We can have a discussion around it. I don't know if I'd like to live longer than whatever. I think I'd get bored. Very keen to see what else is out there. But if one looks at the most cutting edge, if you were to list the top two or three or maybe even five cutting edge technologies that'll get us there, what are they and what do they do?
Sure. So biogerontology looks at seven areas that they're pushing research with regards to longevity. So we're looking at over-replicating cells like cancers, where we're using telomere control to try and work with those. We're looking at death-resistant cells. We're looking at that glycation that I told you about before.
Yes, yes.
Then we're looking at getting rid of intracellular and extracellular waste products so that we can catch the accumulative damage of aging before it causes a problem. And then the last one, which is where a lot of research is going, and it's my favorite, is mitochondrial function. So mitochondria are our little energy cells in our bodies, but they have their own DNA completely. It's not part of our DNA. And because they're bacteria, a lot of the things we do in our lives, like antibacterial wipes and sprays and overuse of antibiotics, can kill off mitochondria if we're not careful. But they help us to build more muscle, burn more fat, create longevity by cleaning up the cells. They like our little vacuum cleaners. So technology in that aspect is moving. And then also in gene editing is moving very quickly. So we're able to do gene therapy, although it's priced crazily at the moment. The price will come down. But if we're able to take a genetic illness that before had no treatment, and in one treatment we can get rid of that genetic issue, and the person is symptom-free from that point on, I mean, this is miraculous stuff, and where it's available.
Well, you do amazing work. And there aren't, you know, China leads when it comes to a lot of the technologies, AI, etc. It's one of the reasons I think Donald Trump's giving China such a hard time, because they're kicking apples behind. I see that you recently went off to China and keynoting to about 10,000 people at a massive aesthetic medical congress. Have you done that? And if you did, how did it go?
Yes, it was beginning of December. It was unbelievable. That country is incredible. I've only spent time in Shanghai, but it was such an amazing experience to speak to that amount of people who don't speak much English. So to have a translator, this is the first time I've used a translator, to have to pause to let the translator catch up. It was an interesting experience. But they really are. The science and technology is incredible, and their ability to be independent is also incredible, which I think is a bit scary for Donald Trump, bless him. But they are really forging the way when it comes to medtech, biotech, and because they have such a big population size, they're able to crowdsource a lot of data much faster than the rest of the world. So they've got a lot of benefits in that respect as well.
Well, I think one of your biggest challenges moving forward is to how to take Donald Trump's brain and actually make it functional. That would be fascinating. Dr. Tamara Pfeiffer, leader in Africa for medical biohacking. Thank you very much. And by the way, before I go, this is just my ADD kicking in, right? What did you study to do what you do at the moment?
Oh, I started off actually as a homeopath, and then I did master's degrees in genetics, busy with a master's in nutrigenomics, and then I did integrative medicine and now biogerontology. So biogerontology is the fancy word for the study of curing aging, and we do that through University of Southern California.
Oh, wow. Really cool. You know, wonderful space. I'm going to go and Google half the stuff you said to me. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. But great to have you on. Fun to talk to. Dr. Tamara Pfeiffer.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lots of fun.
It was definitely on the side as well. Leader in Africa when it comes to medical biohacking.